There's a parable about a mustard seed, and maybe we know the parable that Jesus tells about a mustard seed, but this is actually a different parable. There was a woman who had lost her child, and she's so grief-stricken, she's not quite sure what to do, and so she takes a large sheet, and she begins to wrap it around herself, and then she holds her child close and continues to wrap the sheet around her so she can bring her child with her, and she begins then to seek out help. She goes from everyone she can think of, from the help of science and medicine to the help of those who are spiritual, and she finds no one who is able to help her bring her child back. And finally, she comes across an elder who has heard and thinks possibly there is a wise man high on a mountain that might be able to help her. And as best as he can, he gives this mom direction for how she may find this wise man high in the mountains. And as she journeys up the mountain, she continues to carry the body of her child close, and eventually she finds this wise man who is very holy, and he listens with a heartfelt ear to her plea, and he says that he may be able to help her. But the remedy requires that she help him, and she needs to find mustard seed for this remedy. But it can't just be any mustard seed. It must be mustard seed from a home that had not been touched by darkness or death, from a home that had not experienced loss or pain. And so the woman agrees, and she goes back down the mountain on this journey and begins to visit homes. And she didn't necessarily think it would be easy, but then after the first few homes of not finding folks who had been untouched by pain or death, she begins to wonder just how hard this is going to be, but she perseveres because she is desperate for this remedy. And as she continues on this journey, she hears more and more stories about people who have experienced loss and sadness, and she realizes after a number of these visits that it's not likely that she will find a home that has been untouched by darkness in some way. And she finds that instead of this being something that brings her deeper, she begins to realize she's experiencing something that may seem like healing. And the more stories that others share with her about their own loss and in their own pain, and as she finds herself being able to be present to what they are sharing with her, she finds herself in a place where she recognizes that everyone has been touched in some way or another by loss. And while it's not easy, and it's not that she stops missing her child, she finds the grace and the strength after sharing that space and those stories with people to begin the process of saying goodbye. And she buries her child, and she never makes her way back up the mountain to find the holy man. Something powerful in our life happens when we share the substance of life with other people. For some reason, something in us tries to tell us that we're supposed to be strong, and so if we're struggling with something, to admit that or to share that with somebody else, that is something that we should avoid at all possible costs. Something tells us that when we struggle, we should keep that to ourselves, because that's what strong people do. But that is not really what brings us healing in our lives when we walk through the hard stuff. We will only find ourselves whole in developing a mature heart before God when we journey with others in our weakness and recognize that they also are weak. And we find that as we share that space together and share our stories, that we find ourselves stronger than we would ever be than if we just simply pretended that everything was good all the time and never invited each other into the spaces where we know the truth, which is things can be tough, that things can be dark, that we do know pain. Our passage from Romans this morning doesn't just encourage us to share our lives with others. This isn't simply just a feel-good passage that tells us that it's important for us to have friends. This points us to the significance of being in relationship, the impact that it has in our own lives, and the impact that it has on the lives of others. And I typically don't spend a lot of time during Sunday morning messages looking at the or talking about the original language that the Bible was written in. I know that that's a great way to get people to take naps by talking about Greek. But as we sat with this passage on Monday, which we do, the pastoral staff, when we meet, we put our hearts before the Lord, and we certainly get around to talking about what we think might apply to the congregation and what we know people are walking through at this time, but we also just look to put our heart before the Lord and to begin to live with the passage for the week. And so as we did that this past week, every now and then we'll pull out a different translation or the interlinear, which makes it easy. You don't have to know Greek to use that. And there were some really significant things in that. And I want us to think about some of that today, because I think it points some things out that are different than what we've already heard this morning. And so verse 13, and Pastor Dave prepped us really well with the kids to be thinking about hospitality today. Chapter 13, or verse 13, we've heard it translated as practice hospitality. And this is how most of the translations will say something along those lines. But when we look more closely at the original language, it really says something that is closer to seeking hospitality. So it's not just the practice of hospitality, but it's this active, kind of continual seeking hospitality in our own lives, in the lives of others. And so it's more than just taking the opportunity to be hospitable when that presents itself before us, or making sure that we at least make some time where it might be convenient to be hospitable towards someone else. No, what this verse is really inviting us to is a continual practice of hospitality in our relationships with others. And so I want us to spend some time thinking about what this passage calls us to as it specifically relates to the way that we might build relationships with other Christians as part of the way that God is looking to help us each grow into spiritual maturity in our lives. And so we've already heard it mentioned in a couple different ways and even practiced with the kids the way that we typically think of hospitality. You know, we think that hospitality is making cookies or coffee for someone, or we think that if we're going to be people who practice hospitalities, we need to have nice placemats or a full set of china that matches. When we think of hospitality in this way, we can maybe let ourselves off the hook. You know, like, I don't have a guest room, so I guess God's not calling me to offer hospitality. Because of the way that we look at some of these activities, looking at hospitality simply as that sort of a welcome makes us think that maybe we can get off the hook when it comes to offering this. And it also, if we think of stereotypes, I think we even get in deeper and think, well, that's something that ladies do, right? You know, we would never as men want the call of hospitality because, you know, that's not manly enough for us. Sure, things like food or a comfortable place, those things absolutely have to do with hospitality. And there are certainly women that I think we've all met who have this amazing gift that you know, with like next to nothing can make you feel welcome and make you feel like you've known them their whole life. But I don't want to let any of us off the hook by thinking hospitality is only for those who have the right conditions and the right materials or have it as one of their spiritual gifts in some really significant way. I think the core of hospitality is something that we all not only can practice, but we need to practice. So this is the core of hospitality as I see this passage inviting us to, and it's making room in your life for another person. So again, it's not just the specific act of being able to share a place that is comfortable, but it's making that space to be able to talk with somebody else, to share life deeply with other human beings. And this isn't just related then or important for ladies who know how to drink tea with their pinky out in the right way. I've never understood that, but that doesn't get me off the hook from being able to have to offer this sort of hospitality in my life, because it really has a whole lot more to do with making the kind of space in our hearts to really join other people with what they're going through in life. Seeking hospitality is making room for other people to share the substance of our lives together. And so we see specifically within these verses, it's not just telling us that when it feels good or when we have enough time or pretending to be something that we're not so somebody might like us. No, this talks about being real, being sincere in love, being able to find joy in the things that there's joy in, but when things get tough, being able to join each other in praying for each other. This talks about the real life and the hardships that we each walk in, and sharing life in the midst of that. So seeking hospitality, again, is making room for people to share the substance of life. And this kind of real life means that hospitality isn't always neat and tidy. The important stuff in other people's life won't necessarily wait for us to have enough time or for the project at work to settle down or for the kids to get through the sports season or to get to the end of the school year. If we are truly following Jesus, we will know that we are called to seek hospitality, maybe in those moments that we never expected, in the times that seems like, oh my goodness, how in the world could I fit another thing in? Verse 14 goes as far as to call us to show this sort of welcome even to those who persecute us. And so not only is this a kind of a hospitality that isn't convenient to our schedules, but it even calls us to be bigger people than God knows we are, right? You know, because who would want to welcome someone who would persecute us? So why would Jesus ask us to do that? Jesus knew what it was like to be persecuted. Jesus calls us to be willing to offer that sort of welcome because that's exactly what Jesus does for us. When we were still far away, when we were breaking God's heart, when our actions and attitudes still break God's heart, the creator and lover of our souls, Jesus never says, nope, that's enough. I'm not going to extend you welcome. He is always, always reaching out to us with love into grace. And so he expects us to let that touch our lives in such a way that we would find a way to reach out to others as well. As we move through this passage, we see the kind of hospitality that invites us to share everything that is going on in our lives. Again, not just the things that we think might be important or the things that we would normally share, although it does talk about being able to laugh with those who are lighthearted and celebrating. But it also calls us to be able to share tears with those who are struggling. We are told to not be proud, but to associate with people of low position. And so maybe this is somebody who is from a different group at our school than we'd normally hang out with, or somebody from a different department at work, or maybe somebody in our neighborhood who we wish weren't there. Those could be some of the people of low position that God is calling us to extend a welcome to and to share space with. But maybe in our culture and the way that we interact, this isn't just for people who make less money than us, but maybe this is also the person who voted for the candidate that we would never in a million years voted for, who puts stuff on Facebook that makes us want to say, will you stop posting that? You know, even those people, God is calling us to make space and to share life, the deep stuff of life, with others. And again, I've already pointed out that these verses from Romans aren't just simply saying, well, it's important to have friends in life. No, this is very specific for us as Christians to not only offer this space and the time that is hard and isn't always convenient, but Jesus is at the center of this. And so we're in the series where we're talking about building relationships to maturity. And part of this is recognizing that we will never be the Christian that Jesus knows we can be and is working in us to become if we don't live this sort of hospitality with other Christians. And so that takes time. That takes space for us to be able to do that. And so, you know, maybe you're part of a small group where these sort of things happen. And if that is an important thing for you, maybe the Spirit's inviting you to go even deeper within that. If you don't have a small group, maybe it's time to look to see if there's one that might work for you. Or maybe it's time to look to see, you know what, none of the times work. I'm going to talk to Pastor Matthew and say, I would really, you know, this is when I'd love to see a small group. Maybe the Spirit is working in the heart of somebody else. Those things don't just happen in small groups, though. They happen as we join together before and after worship and as we look for ways to share life. Maybe there's somebody who God's really been putting on your heart, and you'll offer the invitation to say, you know, whether it's at your house or at a coffee shop, let's just spend some time together. Let's share what's going on in each other's lives. But as Christians who are part of the community that is church, we must make the effort to build deep relationships in order for us to grow in the way that God so desires to work in our lives. But we have to make the time and make the space for that to happen. I want to share one of the ways that I've given serious effort to this in my own life, and maybe you've heard me talk about my accountability group that I have with other clergy, and this I know takes different form for different pastors, but this is something that I've been very intentional about. And with the exception of one of the pastors who we were in youth group together, and we've shared very similar journeys in ministry, being in youth ministry at the same time and becoming pastors, with the exception of Dave and I, everybody else that's in this group are folks that, you know, if I knew who they were 5 years ago, you know, that was probably just I knew their name and I would be able to recognize them. And now today we are at a point where we share the deep stuff of life. And so this is a group of five of us who are all United Methodist pastors. We each have been blessed in marriage and have amazing wives. We all have either two or three kids. And each of us have been deeply touched by who Jesus is and what Jesus has done. And there are a few days that pass where we haven't at least texted each other. We have kind of this, I think all of the data on my phone is eaten up by this group text that we share. And very rarely is there any day where one of us isn't texting the group to just see what's going on or to ask for prayer and something that's happening. That tends to be fairly convenient, although we still need to give effort to that. And what sometimes takes more work is making sure that we give time to meet together face to face. I mean, we're spread out over a pretty wide geography. At one point, we went all the way from Lake Placid, New York, down to Findlay Lake, New York, like 8 hours in between. If you ever wondered how big New York State is, there is a lot of geography there. And so we make sure that there's at least a couple times every year where we are face-to-face. And we have a commitment to say not only will we make that happen, but once that's on the schedule that we will be together. And in a couple weeks, we will be at annual conference. And I know that there will be plenty of opportunities for us to sit next to each other during sessions and to maybe grab a cup of coffee, but we have to really be intentional in those few short days to make sure we have time. And so we spent some time going back and forth this week to say, when are we all going to sit down, just the five of us, and have a meal together? And so that took time, that took effort. We had to be committed to that because there's a lot of other people that we love to see and spend time with at annual conference, but this is something that is important to us, not only for what it brings to us in our lives, but we have a responsibility for each other, for our marriages, for our churches, the ministry, our children. We are responsible to each other because we've made the space of hospitality to walk together. And so, again, there's a number of ways that this may happen within the life of the church, but it takes a commitment. We have to spend time in order for that to happen. But even beyond that, it takes an openness of heart. And we're going to do what we do each week, gather at this table of hospitality where Jesus welcomes us here in a couple minutes. But this act is never meant for us to simply just between us and Jesus. If that's all communion was, we could, you know, I could at the door each week hand you out enough communion vitamins to last you until the next time that we gather. And you could take that every day with breakfast. But what communion is, it's Jesus welcoming us and being hospitable to us no matter where we've been. But it's within the context of community. We do that with each other. And I think sometimes we lose sight of that and we think, okay, this is just, I'm coming forward and it's just the time for Jesus and I. No, this is a time where we together, as a community of those who love Jesus, meet Jesus in our midst. And so I want to give us a little bit of space here this morning to greet each other. We're not going to do the communion liturgy yet. I'll pull us back together. And so I would encourage you to not just go to somebody who you already know really well, but take some time. And again, this scripture calls us to be sincere. So I'm not asking you to pretend to have a connection that you don't already have, or to just say something that you think you should, but find a way to greet at least one other person. You might have enough time for two or three, but to just really be together in this space and to understand that, you know, maybe you don't know everything there is to know about that particular person, but welcome them to this community. Be together in a way that is significant. And so sometimes when the passing of the peace happens at church, it's like a time to catch up on church business or a time to just share town gossip or all kinds of. No, I really want to make sure that this few minutes that I'm going to open us up to is a time to greet each other in the love of Christ and to find a way that we can be present and share life together. So I'm going to give us maybe 4 or 5 minutes and then call us back together before we come to the table. But I invite you, if you're able to stand and find somebody who maybe you don't know at all or somebody that you haven't talked to in a while, and greet them today with God's love.